I decided to take things 1 year at a time. And so that's how I do my life now. I take everything 1 year at a time. And so for that 1 year, I do the following things. I define what my definition of success is. I define what I want my work-life balance or harmony or synergy to look like. I decide what my bare minimum salary has to be for that year. And then I also decide where I want to live. And some of those questions will just be quick answers because you need the same amount of money to live for the most part every year, and maybe you just want to stay where you're at. But defining your definition of success and what you want your work-life balance to look like are very two complicated questions. And Chris, you went through the book, so I'm sure you know you understand how complicated they are to answer.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Kaprelian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Kaprelian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this next episode, we have Misty Moreno, a retired Air Force HR professional. She's going to talk to us about HR, what you can do in order to gain an HR certification, project management, and how that helped her throughout her career, a great resource called Vets to PM, which we'll discuss, and her book. I'm going to give you a disclaimer. Normally, we don't have episodes that have curse words in them, and I promise you, we did not curse all the time throughout this thing, but in an effort to talk about the title of her book and in order to be at 100% authentic in ourselves, I'm giving you just a heads up. If you're driving your kids, maybe you want to save this episode for later. Otherwise, hey, sit back, relax, or keep running if that's what you're doing while listening to this podcast, because we got some great information and you might want to listen to it twice or at the very least take notes. So have a listen. Misty Moreno, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
So excited.
Yeah. Well, it's our first HR professional on the podcast, and definitely interested in delving into that, some of the things that you've been doing to help service members in their transition, and your book, published author, overachiever. Very happy to have you on, but to start out, maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about where you came from and your military background, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I grew up in Narragansett, Rhode Island, and I lived there for 15 years. So I lived by the beach, and it was an awesome experience. I have a twin sister, and I also have an older brother. My parents got divorced when I was 15, so we moved to Key West, Florida. So my mom took us on a vacation right when they were going through a divorce. And we joke, we say we never came back to Rhode Island. And so I kind of had the best of both worlds. I would go back and forth to Rhode Island and Key West, Florida. And I graduated high school in Key West, Florida, and then went to college at Johnson & Wales University. And I did an associate's degree in fashion merchandising because I thought that I liked fashion enough to make it a career. And after 2 years, I was like, get me the heck out of here. And I walked by a recruiter's office every day. And yeah, when I graduated with my associate's degree, my father said, hey, you're going to have to do something. I was like, okay. So I went to the recruiter's office, and my brother was a Marine. So we had a little bit of, you know, family history there. But he told me that I was not allowed to join the Marines and that I was only allowed to join the Air Force. So I'm not sure exactly why he said that, but I joined the Air Force and I served for 20 years. I started at F.E. Warren Air Force Base, and then I went to Shaw Air Force Base, Moody Air Force Base, Whiteman Air Force Base, and then back to Shaw. And I had a tour in Iraq throughout that time as well. So I was a human resources professional, or manpower and personnel, and yeah, did lots of things. So your traditional like human resources specialist and then a generalist. And then I did a lot of training and development, executive assistant duty. And my wartime function was casualty reporting. And so, yeah, ended at 20 years at AFCENT. Definitely had a big role in the drawdown in Afghanistan. And in 2019, I made a rash decision, but it was the best rash decision of my life. I wanted to retire, and here I am now. So about almost 3 years later, I work at Continental Tire, and I also am an independent contractor for Vets to PM.
Yeah, but you can't drop that bomb like, I made a rash decision, an excellent rash, and not tell us about the rash. I want to know about the rash decision. So give us a little more background on, all right, so when did you make, other than working at like a high echelon command, which I do, and there's a lot of like, there's a lot of administrative work that isn't very glamorous, but needs to get done. I don't know if that's what caused you to say, hey, you know what, this is a good time to transition, or were there other factors at play?
So my husband and I always planned that I was going to stay in the Air Force and I was going to make Chief Master Sergeant and stay as long as the Air Force would have me, and that he would retire at 20 years. And that was always our plan. We also planned for my husband to be a stay-at-home father and husband. So we financially planned for that. And that was all really done before we moved back to Shaw Air Force Base. So Whiteman Air Force Base was by far the best base that we ever lived at and really worked at too, because really great mission there. But it was a good one for our family. We had a lot of like work-life balance there. Quality of life was great. We lived on base. Our son, that was really when he was starting to make friends and develop a personality and could go ride his bike and stuff like that. And then when I made Senior Master Sergeant, within 2 months, we were gone. So they told us that you have an option. You can go to Louisiana or you can go to South Carolina. And because we had a really great family friend, Carol and Todd here, and we had family close by, we decided that we would just come back to South Carolina because we knew it. Now, we did not want to come back here because the mission at Shaw is very high ops tempo, and we both were here for almost 11 years the first time. And so when I came back, I mean, I immediately realized like why I did not want to be back here. And then you throw in, you know, hey, I'm going to go ahead and tweet out that we're going to withdraw from Afghanistan. So, and that's my, you know, that's where I worked. So I say all that to kind of set up the environment. My husband and I were just not where we were in our marriage. And, you know, with our son who was 14 at the time, we just, this was not the environment that we wanted to be in and raise our son in. And work-life balance was not, you know, it was non-existent. And then the tempo was just really fast. And I don't know if you feel this way, but the more and more that I saw how war was planned, the more and more I just realized, hey, you know what? It's time. It's time to go. And then for me, I had a civilian leader who I did not see eye to eye with, and he did not respect me as the senior master sergeant that I was. And so lots of stuff there. But we had a meeting one day. He said something to me. I won't repeat, but he said something to me where I just said to myself, you know what, Misty, you have an option to retire now. You know, you have to take the signs from the universe, and this, it just might be time. So within 5 minutes, I pressed the button to retire, and I called my husband from the car.
So that's
my rash decision.
I think that is a well-calculated and good trigger for making that decision. I mean, I'm sure you look back on it now, and I think we've already had this conversation, but you look back on it, and on its face, it may look rash, but if you're not in an environment where you think you can continue to thrive, and certainly you had the opportunity to put family first and put other things first, It just seemed like, well, all the pieces of the puzzle aligned and it makes sense.
Absolutely. And I don't regret the decision at all. And as soon as I made the decision, it was even more clear that you really are just a number. And this is not me, like, I don't want people to feel bad at all. I mean, the unit has to move on. So they had to make a decision, like, okay, what to do now. And they didn't want to have me in the same position, you know, while I was waiting out retirement. So they went ahead and made me an executive assistant as a senior master sergeant. And I understand the decision. The decision just solidified every feeling I was, you know, I was experiencing at that moment. And so I'm not one that likes to, you know, I call it like, I don't want to be a BMW. I don't want to bitch, moan, and whine. So I'm either going to solve the problem the best that I can and do what's within my control. And that's exactly what I did. I tried to solve the problem for about a year there with my civilian boss. No solution that where I felt like I was being heard. And yeah, so I made the decision, hey, I don't want to be a negative Nelly here. So I'm going to leave the service, kind of what I feel like on a high, and I'm going to go do life somewhere else. So happy I did. And everything fell into place beautifully, you know, with Continental Tire. So I'm living my best life.
Now that's interesting. How did that fall in place?
Yeah, so I went ahead and put in my retirement September 1st of 2019. So if you can just picture the timeline, what was happening around that time, right? So COVID was rapid in overseas. So I went ahead and applied for the DoD SkillBridge program, and I got approved, and my last day was going to be March 1st. So I applied with a local construction company to do an HR internship. They made it very clear that there was no open position, but if you want to come here and gain experience, then we'd be happy to support you. And I was like, yes, absolutely. So 1 March, I left the military and started my DoD SkillBridge. And then by April, we were all virtual. You know, South Carolina was for the most part pretty shut down at that point because that was the height of COVID. So I just did everything that was within my control. And that's really my theme for my transition and my transformation. And we'll talk probably a little bit more about that. But whatever's within my control is what I'm going to do. So when I went to TAP, I downloaded the checklist. It said to make a LinkedIn account. I made a LinkedIn account. It gave me some tips and tools. I went on to LinkedIn.com and read like every article in their help section, how to set up my LinkedIn and how to be, you know, a little bit more optimized for recruiters to contact me. And so while I was on my DoD SkillBridge, the people at the local construction company, it's called Thompson Construction Group, their HR team, 100%, like they looked at my resume, they helped me make it a little bit more HR focused and not leadership focused, right? Because I was really wanting to like get a HR generalist job. And they helped me with my LinkedIn profile, what to put, interviewing, all this stuff. So while I was in my DoD SkillBridge, I was also working on my LinkedIn, and I received a message from a recruiter. She cited a couple of my LinkedIn posts and asked me if I would want an informational interview. And the rest is history. I started there June 29th in 2020, and I've been there ever since.
And not a haphazard transition. That's great. That's a great success story of SkillBridge, even though it didn't transition into working for the company you were with. I mean, how awesome is it that they actually helped you tailor your resume towards the corporate lexicon or the lexicon of that industry to make you more appealing to recruiters? Sounds like a great, a very successful and just a really good SkillBridge experience.
Yeah, they were super awesome. Gina and Teresa and Amanda and Andrew, I would not be where I'm at without them. I 100% believe that, because they were very clear from the beginning, hey, we don't have any HR positions here, but we're going to help you succeed. They introduced me to all of the HR systems that they had, you, and I was very familiar with HR systems, right? Just from being in the Air Force, but I was able to see, you know, like Workday and SAP and ADP, and those are a whole bunch of different HR systems. They were able to show me like their filing system and how they do onboarding and orientation and training. And I even was able to go on a couple of recruiting trips, and I did a college interview trip where we like interviewed internships for their college program. So I really got to see like, oh yeah, HR is definitely what I want to do. This is right up my alley. And then every day we had like personal time where they would come and sit with me and look at my resume and my LinkedIn and help me with interviews and stuff like that.
I do have a couple of questions for you because you mentioned learning about new systems in HR. And so I'd like you to, could you expound on that a little bit? I understand that there are pillars in civilian HR, and then there's the HR that many of us in the military are aware of, whether it's pay, entitlements, disciplinary matters, promotions, and other special recognition. Can you talk about what is in the civilian sector that we're familiar with, but the other things that are unique to the civilian sector?
Yeah, so in the military, especially in the Air Force, I had the Military Personnel Data System, which we called MILPIDS. And then we had a couple other systems, but MILPIDS was really the main one for personnel issues, updates, whatever it may be. So that was the main system that I could populate data in and then also extract data from. And then we had a pay system, and then we also had a training system. So I'm sure there's lots of other systems in the military, but those are the three that I interacted with the most in 20 years. And so then when I came from the civilian sector, I'll be quite honest, I think they're very similar. You put data in, you can get data out. The thing that caught me off guard in the civilian sector is how things are not always connected. So in the military, if you would update the personnel system, then that would update the training system, and that would update the pay system. And then that would also, you know, correlate with any sort of leave or absences that you're taking. And then ultimately, you would get this big report that included all three systems, and you could see a lot of data. And from my experience only in the civilian sector, it doesn't always work that way. Not every system talks to one another, so you have to populate the data twice, or you can pull a report from this system, but you'll have to pull a report from that system in order to get one big report, and then you do a lot of consolidating. And for me, I do a lot of taping. I just tape certain things for reports. But yeah, I love systems, and it's crazy because I'm not very tech savvy, you know, but I love the fact that you can populate information and then get information, and data analysis is sort of a new hobby for me, really getting into that. So learning the system side of the civilian HR sector has been awesome, just because that really interests me.
I can tell from personal experience that data integrations and having systems talk to each other has been the most frustrating part of introducing new systems into our company, because they don't talk to each other. So you have to, like you said, download a bunch of different data in order to bring it into one. And we have a wonderful woman who does all of our data analytics, and she is the queen of it. And she can take 15 different spreadsheets and somehow make it into one sheet. And I don't know how she does it, but that's so frustrating.
That's a gift. And for anyone who wants to, you know, go into HR, like the civilian sector, it is important to look at job postings and see what systems they would like you to have experience in. And although military members, you're most likely not going to be able to get that experience, you could go on LinkedIn Learning, and if you go through the military transition program, you get like 1 year free or 6 months free, whatever. I know it changed a little bit, but even if it's not free, LinkedIn Learning is by far one of the best resources for training and development. So if a job posting says that you need SAP experience or work human experience, then go on to LinkedIn Learning and search and see if they have any sort of, you know, trainings for that. That way you can say, at least, you know, like there's three levels of learning, right? Knowledge, comprehension, and application. At least you know SAP or work human or whatever that system is, and you can study it a little bit more if you get that job. And then with, you know, OJT on the job training, you can apply the information. So the HR systems for people that want to transition to the civilian sector, you know, don't get too focused or discouraged if you don't have that experience, because no one's going to expect you to have it if they know that you're coming from a military environment. Now you just have to utilize the resources that you have, right? What's in your control. So go on to LinkedIn Learning and see if there's anything there. YouTube is a great place to look as well.
Can you just do me a favor? Can you just describe what an HR generalist is? Because there's so many different pillars of, you know, of what we call now people or HR, but what is it specifically, what does a generalist do?
So for the people that are listening to this podcast that are familiar with like a first sergeant role, right? So in the Air Force, we have a first sergeant role. I know in the Army, they have a first sergeant role, but an HR generalist, from my experience, from what I know, and also from what the certification programs say, an HR generalist is really a jack of all trades. They know lots of different things when it comes to the human resources, you know, career field. So they know a little bit about pay, a little bit about promotions, a little bit about this and that, right? And so when you hire an HR generalist or a human resources business partner, which is really kind of the trend now, right, for HR generalists, then you are expecting them to know not only the like the HR applications, but also like conflict management, problem solving, project management, whatever it may be. So an HR generalist is really a jack of all trades. If you're an HR specialist, then you are like, you're a benefit specialist, like employee benefit specialist, where you know the ins and outs of, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Cigna and, you know, your employee assistance program. And so you may not have a lot of knowledge on the other stuff, but you are specialists. And I do believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the trend nowadays is where we're really moving towards HR generalists and HR business partners, so we can do more for our customers, like where we can really utilize our headcount. Specialists, that was, you know, maybe 10 years ago, but we have a couple specialists at Continental still. But the generalist is just a jack of all trade. They know a lot and they can really do a lot for the company.
Yeah, I agree. I think as an HR generalist, it opens doors for actually other people to be able to take those roles as well, because it has such a wide variety of backgrounds and knowledge, and you don't need to have like specific knowledge, just like you said, as like a specialist in benefits, where you do need to have an extensive amount of knowledge when it comes to those that sector. So, but thank you for explaining that to the listeners, for sure.
Yeah, no problem. And for anyone who wants to break into HR, I always, always suggest that they look into HR generalist positions or human resource business partner positions, especially for those that have, you know, probably about 8 to 20 years of experience, because they do have the technical knowledge, like technical human resources, maybe not civilian HR experience, but human resources is human resources. You just have to adapt to the environment that you're in. So not only does that, you know, avatar or audience have technical HR experience, but they also have the soft skills, the project management skills, problem solving skills, whatever it may be. So the HR generalist, in my opinion, is really the position that if you're wanting to break into HR, that's a good one to aim for.
It also sounds like anybody that's had experience leading troops, any branch of service, that have had to deal with all facets of military administration, whether they were the actual administrators or HR professionals, or they were the leadership that had to be, that played an integral role in it. It sounds like that would also be an opportunity for those individuals to transition as well. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So I use my husband as an example. He was a weapons troop in the military for 20 years. So I always joke with him that, like, what are you going to do on the outside? Like, go work for ISIS? Like, you know, so, but he would, if he was going to work, he'd be a great person to maybe, you know, dip his toes into the HR career field, because for 10 years, like for the last 10 years of his military career, he was a supervisor, a superintendent, you know, and so he did onboarding and orientation, and he, you know, did performance evaluations, and he was in charge of training, and he also, you know, did a lot of recruiting into his career field, you know, from other career fields. And so the whole gamut. So absolutely.
I noticed, and I'm trolling your LinkedIn profile. It's actually, it's, well, you know, when it's really well designed and organized, it's actually quite helpful, even for not just not a recruiter, but even for somebody that's a novice in podcasting. So you have a certificate from Human Resource Certification Institute, specifically a professional and HR certification. What was the value of that certification to you in your current employment? And how can it benefit others that want to go transition into the HR career field?
Yeah, so my certification journey actually began with my project management professional certification, and that's where I learned the value of certifications, not only for my personal and professional development, but also for hiring purposes and really for promotion purposes. So in 2019, I started my journey with the PMP certification, and I started that with Vets to PM. And it was there where I really learned the value of certifications, where it validates your experience, but it also provides you information about project management in the civilian sector, or, you know, in this case, human resources in the civilian sector. And then once I was certified, you know, the magic happens once you get your certification, because now you have to, you know, sustain your certification. And so I was doing professional development units or continuing education units, you know, in areas that I was really needing more information on. So like for project management, I wanted to do, you know, professional development in like managing Six Sigma projects. For human resources, I wanted to do professional development in data, you know, analysis. And so the magic happens, or at least for me, when you are trying to sustain your certification. So yes, the certification, it validated my experience. So it validated that I do have HR experience, you know, human resources experience, maybe not in the civilian sector, but in the military sector. I had to study certain curriculum in order to learn like the six areas of HR, right? And then I took that exam, I passed. And so then I, you know, continued with my continuing education units. And so I've just been, I have a goal every week to complete, you know, at least one CEU for all my certifications every week. And so I'm just consistently learning. And I will tell you that my certifications did not get me hired, because those are preferred, you know, preferred requirements, but they 100% got me promoted. And so I know there's a lot of people on LinkedIn that says, you know, not every military member is a PMP, a project manager, or a human resources professional. And I agree with that statement a little bit, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't get the certifications. The certifications is another way to gain some sort of educational experience. Not everybody, you know, wants to go to college or even has the means to go to college. So why not tap into another source? And I'm sure, you know, the HR professional on the other end will agree with me, but like pretty soon I can imagine pretty soon we're not going to need bachelor's degrees and master's degrees to get certain jobs because of the, you know, of AI and whatever it may be. The trend will probably be certifications or professional development that's not necessarily a college degree.
I mean, I'm going to agree with you because I'm going to say something very personal. I don't have a college degree.
Good for
technically.
You.
And I, you know, I took a job and it didn't allow me to be able to do that. But my question for you, there's one. So there's also the SHRM. So that's Society for Human Resource Management. That's another certification. I'm seeing this a lot happening with people that are going to college that are taking these courses and getting certified for that. And, you know, it started to be something that is a big clue on people's resumes for us to see that they have some type of background. And like you said, it's not something that's getting them the job, but it's also good to have, but it's also very expensive. And so I didn't know if you had any thoughts about SHRM specifically or not.
So about SHRM specifically?
Yeah. Well, if
you thought, I actually do.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah, there you go. I actually do. So my journey with certification started with the PMP, but then it progressed to the SHRM. And so I signed up for the SHRM and the information was just so overwhelming, how much information that they wanted us to study. And I, you know, fun fact, I actually failed my SHRM certification. So I went ahead and applied for the lower certification for SHRM and put in about 6 months of studying and then finally passed that. So I was probably about $1,000 in with those two certifications, all of the education material, the curriculum, and the class. And with the SHRM, I now know this, right? Because I'm 3 years out and I'm way more skilled in HR in general. But with the SHRM, they are teaching you HR. They are teaching you every aspect of HR through their exam and through their curriculum and classes. And through the HRCI that, you know, the other one out there, mm-hmm. which fun fact, they actually used to be together, but they branched off. So SHRM is more, I'm going to teach you everything that you possibly could know. And it's going to be up to you to deploy great study techniques to be able to pass our exam. With the HRCI, they have an awesome exam content outline. And then if you study the material that is on the exam content outline, you're going to pass. I do not believe that the SHRM or the HRCI are better or worse. I do believe that if you look at the history behind both, you know, SHRM is very backed by political leaders and Congress. And that's why they have a lot of, you know, resources to do what they do. They're on the Hill and that's good. That's good for human resources in general. But anytime, and we know, anytime you put politics behind an organization, it can get a little wishy-washy, right? Mm. HRCI, not really, that's not how they do business. And they're definitely not putting out blogs and material the way that SHRM is, but I do believe that what they put out is valuable. So honestly, whatever certification you go through, I think you're going to be able to validate your experience and you'll be able to learn a lot. And then if you choose to do continuing education units with either one, you're still going to increase your HR knowledge. For me personally, the HRCI track was cheaper and it was simpler. And for military members, those two things are important to us. So that's why I now write HR curriculum for HRCI.
Oh, no kidding. I know maybe you could just transition a little bit. You're not just a recipient of the certification, but you're also an instructor or a coach through Vets 2PM. That's Vets, the number two, Papa Mike. How did you start your relationship with them and what is it you do with Vets to PM?
I always like to say that I'm a Vets to PM and I'm a LinkedIn success story, and both are true. So Vets to PM came into my life through a chief that cared so much about the fact that I told him, hey, I'm retiring. I just wanted you to know I'm not going to be able to be your project manager on this anymore. And he was really concerned and, you know, he wanted to make sure that I was set up for success. So he took some time and sat with me and mapped out a transition plan as far as like, what am I going to do with my life? And one of the things that he suggested was that I just go and get my project management certification because I have a lot of experience with project management. And so he gave me the website and all of the information, and that is how my relationship started with Vets TPM. I took their in-person boot camp class, and then I studied for about 6 months and then passed my exam. When I took the in-person boot camp class, I knew immediately that it was something that I wanted to get involved in. So I am an instructor. I love to train, and I, quite frankly, and this is a kind of a little fun fact about me, is I grew up in theater. So I did a lot of theater in, you know, middle school and high school, and I even tried out to be an actress on a couple of soap operas, and I won't tell you which ones. It didn't work out, obviously. But I've always, you know, always acted, always danced, very artistic in that sense. And so instructing is sort of a way that I can still do theater. And so when I was going through the boot camp class, I asked them, like, hey, how could I be an instructor? And they said, hey, when you get your PMP, just talk to us then. So I was like, okay. So it took me a little bit to get my PMP, and I reached back out and said, hey, I would love to be, you know, an instructor, you know, do you need instructors? And so, yeah, they were like, absolutely. So I've been teaching the Vets to PM project management certification bootcamp class for a course for almost 2 years. And throughout that journey, you know, the CEO, he had asked me, he's like, you know what, one day we should write an HR course together. And I was like, well, I'll do one better for you. I'll write it for you. I can do that. I can do that right now. So I wrote the HR course, and it's on the website.
Nice.
Oh my God. We're like living parallel lives. I used to be an actress too. I sang, dance on stage, and yes, now I'm working in HR. I think we need to talk after this.
Yes.
Sorry, bro. Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Vets to PM has been super influential in my life in so many different ways, not to mention like Jeremy and Garrick and Kelly, Kathy and Doc. And even Bridget and Jessica, they're the main people that work for Vets to PM. And they're just, you know, you could just tell that they're living out their core values. They all have some sort of experience with the military, whether it be a spouse or they served. And they're just truly committed to making sure that veterans have options and that veterans validate their experience through certifications. And they are not too big to say, you know what, maybe there's better options out there. But they're just super supportive. And now they even have like a SkillBridge program. And I'm just, it's so cool to see where they were and where they are now. And I'm just really blessed to be a part of the journey.
And thank you very much for sharing that. We haven't been able to talk about Vets to PM in our previous episodes. So we'll make sure that we post the links to Vets to PM in the episode notes. For those of you that are interested, check it out. And make sure you delve into it. I have one question, instructor of PM project management. I will admit I've looked into the Project Management Institute's PMP certification, or project management professional, as you were discussing. And I'll be honest, like the application in and of itself is pretty intimidating. Like trying to rack my brain of the things that add up to the hours necessary to qualify for the examination. I'm sure you've heard similar concerns from students. What do you tell them?
So if you're not going to work with Vets to PM, then what I would tell you is I would get all of your evaluations. And so hopefully you have them. So print out all of your evaluations, your officer performance reports, all of your award packages, because us military members, we have them, right? So go ahead and get them, print them out, get a couple different highlighters, and then just start highlighting what qualifies as a project. And so what qualifies as a project is you're delivering a unique good service, product, or result. No two projects are the same, but there are similar projects. So if you're going to not work with Vets to PM, then print out all of your evaluations, get a couple different highlighters, and start highlighting projects as long as they qualify to be projects. And I'll give you an example. You know, every time that you onboard a new airman or a new Marine or a new soldier, boom, that's a project. anytime that you do, you know, an orientation briefing or whatever, you catch my drift. Like there's a lot of different things that qualify as projects. And so that's what I would do. PMI actually has great instructions on how to fill out that application. I think some people just see it and then they were like, oh my gosh, this is too hard. But we just have to read. We have to go through the application. We have to read their guide, and it really walks us through it. So it walks through the application, what they're looking for, and how to word it. Now, if you were to go through Vets to PM, you can sign up for, you know, when you sign up for the class, you also get a resource. It's how to fill out your application in 1 hour, and the video takes you through it. And also as part of just free resources, so if you wanted to sign up for free resources, we have our application guide on for the PMP. And so it's actually an Excel sheet that you just, you know, load in all your projects and the time, and then we sort of do the application for you, and then you'll just download it and then submit that to PMI with a lot of other steps in between. But yeah, you can definitely fill it out without utilizing a resource like Vets to PM. You just have to read the information that PMI provides you. I would dedicate probably a good 2 to 3 hours. I would try to do it at one time, because once you get into the habit of identifying what a project is and then doing the timeline, it just gets easier. So dedicate a couple hours and the application is well worth it.
That's great advice. And thank you, Coach. I'm taking notes.
You're welcome.
No, I appreciate it.
And just so everyone knows, there's so many other organizations out there that have their specialty, right? And so there's other organizations like Vets to PM that, you know, they also do project management or other certifications, or they help transitioning military actually with their transition. There's other organizations out there that do DOD skill bridges and all that stuff. My advice always is just to find the one that you jive with and that meets your needs, and then stick with that, because you can get into a rabbit hole with resources, because different resources are going to tell you different things. For me, my chief cared enough about me to, you know, promote Vets to PM, and I trusted him. And so that's why I went with Vets to PM. They're a one-stop shop. Find someone that is a one-stop shop. Every organization out there, for the most part, is doing really good by veterans. And so it doesn't have to be the one that I like. Just choose the one, stick with it, and get the most out of the organization.
All right. A firm. And that's that's good gouge. So we covered HR and we've covered project management. I want to get to what's next. It's your book.
Mm-hmm.
And man, talk about a catchy title. Get your shit together.
Have you gotten your shit together yet?
I am constantly in a state of attempting to get my shit together. It's a catastrophe sometimes. Sometimes I'm successful, but I put the effort into it. I've been going through the questions in the book, trying to knock out one every day, but admittedly, sometimes it's one every 3 days.
Yeah, that's fine.
But all good stuff. I'd like to talk about what is the genesis of your book?
So I would say, you know, it just stems from when I was going through my transition journey. So I transitioned like a whole year. So, you know, September 1st of 2019 is when I dropped my paperwork, and then I officially retired 1 year later. So from that time, I was on LinkedIn and also on Facebook a lot, and I just kept getting messages like, oh, it looks like you have your shit together. You're doing this, you're doing that. It's like you're getting a job, or, you know, you have this all figured out. And I actually got really offended by all those messages. I'm like, you have no idea the stuff that I do every single day in order to have it all figured out. You know, like I put a lot of work into my job search, into my resumes, into interviewing, into certifications, you know, also a lot of money into that stuff as well. And so when people were telling me like, oh, it's just so easy for you, or you just have it all put together, you always have, it's like it almost came off as it wasn't a compliment. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of sick of it. I also watched a lot of people transition from the military that really just didn't have their shit together. And I watched the, you know, kind of, I don't know, just the slow fall, right? Like they get out of the military because they wanted to. Most people that get out of the military don't have to, especially the people that separate. A lot of people retire. I retired way prior to having to. And so you get out of the military for a reason. And it seems like as soon as people take the uniform off, it's like they get amnesia. And so I wanted to make sure that people understood, like, hey, no, this doesn't come easy for me. It's a lot of work for me. And so I just wrote a simple book on how to get your shit together that will help you do any sort of transition in your life. And it really starts with how I got my shit together to transition, you know, from the military to the civilian sector. The first thing I did was I defined what my definition of success is. You know, the second thing I did was XYZ, you know, go through the questions. And so I really take you through what I did in order to get my shit together for the transition. And then the end of the book just gives you some simple tips and tools on how to live your life and how to navigate the shit storm and how not to be a shitty human being. So
lessons for all of us.
Yeah. So correct yourself. No, yeah. I mean, I got your book and I really like it. I found that the questions, and we're not going to talk about all the questions. You got to get the book and we'll put the link, we'll put the link in the episode notes. But the questions are very introspective. And I found that the variety of the questions truly forced me to start looking, framing in my mind what I wanted for my future. And before you, and you had mentioned this, before you can think about the future, you kind of have to think about who you are. And that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I think particularly as somebody that's been in the military for 20 years, I mean, some of it is taken for granted. Some of it we don't even realize, you know, some of it is a suppression of our desires and not really thinking about how we would want what we want our changed future to look like. So I really like the book. I was struck, and I think we initially communicated over LinkedIn after I was on day 17. The question was, what are the three most important things in your life? Like, yeah. And one of the things, and I don't know if you did something similar, but I mean, this, just to give an example, doing this podcast, it takes time, right? And I think there are a lot of people out there. I'm a dad. I've got a demanding job. I've got relationships that I want to maintain. But I also wanted to transition. I want to learn a new skill. So I didn't let excuses be the thing to hold me back. I found a way to make time to invest in me every day. And if I couldn't do it every day, I was going to do it at least every other day or make up for it so that I could ask myself those questions. And so I found the book very inspiring. I thought it was a great list of introspective questions. It's more than just questions, though. It's a very methodical framing and progression of how to think, discover yourself and think forward. So
well, thank you.
I know I'm running my gums here a little bit, but I was really, really appreciate it. What did you find surprising following your transition? Like the different lifestyle changes. I mean, I'm sure there are many, but when you reflect back on your transition, what were the things that were great about the transition and maybe some of the things that were challenging?
I'll start with the challenging. The thing that surprised me the most was just how wrong my expectations were. So I'm not sure why I expected to go into the civilian sector and not be Misty. And so let me tell you who Misty is. Misty, for 20 years, but way more than that, even when I was a young kid, Misty is a workaholic. Misty does not like to have free time because it's way too much time for my brain to start thinking things that probably are not very healthy. You know, Misty doesn't always put her family first, and my husband and my son would tell you that. I love to work, and if I didn't have a family, I would definitely be, you know, I would work way more than I do now. I would have way more things to do to fill my time. So for some reason, I expected to get out of the military and not be Misty, you know? And so my expectations were really the biggest thing that surprised me is just how they were not met. You know, I still work long hours. I still go in early. I still stay late. I still work on the weekend. I'm on call. Things that happen at work trickle into my personal life. You know, when I'm at home and trying to be with my family, I'm still not always present. You know, and you can see I have a couple different things going on in my life, so I'm still a workaholic. And so I would say that just in navigating that, I truly believe that a lot of military members believe that the solution to fixing your life is to leave the military. And that is 100% false. And if you think that, let's talk, because that is not going to happen. I still don't go to the doctors. I still cancel appointments. I still don't do what I need to do to take care of myself because work needs me. You know what I mean? I still don't always go to my son's games. I still don't always, you know, talk with my husband uninterrupted by the phone. Like, you're still you. And so when you leave the military, really what you're doing is you're taking the uniform off, but you're still you. So it's not going to solve all the problems. And so the good things that have really happened is, I mean, I got my shit together quickly when I realized, like, oh, it's you. You're the problem, Misty. And so I decided to take things 1 year at a time. And so that's how I do my life now. I take everything 1 year at a time. And so for that 1 year, I do the following things. I define what my definition of success is. I define what I want my work-life balance or harmony or synergy to look like. I decide what my bare minimum salary has to be for that year. And then I also decide where I want to live. So for every year, I'm doing those four things. I'm defining my definition of success. I'm looking at what I want my work-life balance to look like. What do I need to make in order to withstand my lifestyle? And where do we want to live? And some of those questions will just be quick answers because you need the same amount of money to live for the most part every year, and maybe you just want to stay where you're at. But defining your definition of success and what you want your work-life balance to look like are very two complicated questions. And Chris, you went through the book, so I'm sure, you know, you understand how complicated they are to answer, you know. But I encourage people just to take it 1 year at a time. And so the good thing about my transition is that I know what my definition of success is, and I definitely know what I want my work-life balance to be. And my family, because my husband stays home, and we are blessed that he gets to stay home, they support me, and they know that what I bring to the table as far as the financial contribution allows them to have the life that they have. And let me just tell you, watching my husband and my son every single day get to do what they dreamt, like they dreamed about this for years, to be able to, like, my husband is a football coach, my son plays football, they, you know, they're always at the school together doing things. Like, I get to watch this, and I get to watch my husband do his most favorite thing in the world, and that's father his child. So my transition has been, I would say it's been super smooth, super successful. Yes, there's a lot of things that are happening mentally. But as far as the transition piece, because there is a difference between transitioning and, you know, transforming, as far as the transition piece, my expectations let me down a little bit, but I was able to get my shit together by answering those four questions. And I do that every year.
And those four questions align with your values and what is most important to you in your life.
Absolutely. And I started off in the HR career field probably at a lower level than maybe what people would think that I should have started as a senior master sergeant with all my experience, blah, 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 right? But I strategically made sure that I was starting at a level that I was going to be able to handle, that I was going to be able to excel at, and that eventually I would just look really good at, right? So that's why I started as an HR generalist, kind of mid-level. You know, everyone was like, oh my gosh, you're worth so much more. You can be a manager, you can be a director. BS. No, you can't. Not when you leave the military and you have no idea what happens in the civilian sector. So I wanted to make sure that I respected the career field enough to start at the mid-level, gain that experience, and now look where I'm at, you know, and I don't say that bragging, but it was all strategic and it's all based on exactly my values, what I want my life to look like. My definition of success has nothing whatsoever to do with the amount of money I'm getting paid, the car that I drive, or the house that I live in. It has everything to do with how content, how fulfilled, how mentally sound am I? And every day I have this exercise that I do. When I walk in the house, I have a calendar on the right-hand side. And by each day, I put an X or I put a check. And the X represents a pretty shitty day where my mental health was not taken care of. Maybe I reacted or responded to things, or my environment is just not, you know, helping me be who I want to be. And a check just is the total opposite. And I do that for every year. And in December, I evaluate how many X's and how many checks I have. And that determines what I do for the next year, right? Because I'm taking my life 1 year at a time. And I'm super happy to report that I do not in 3 years have more than 10 X's. And I just think that that's because I decided to start where I did. And I know my definition of success. And I know what I want my work-life balance to look like.
Man, I'm pumped up.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it now and gather my own data.
Well, let's transition. We're going to start wrapping it up here. But before we do, I wanted to know, what are the two or three things you'd want listeners to remember as they prepare for their own transition?
So there's a difference between transitioning and transforming. When we talk about transitioning from the military, whether you are separating or retiring, we're talking about the logistics of it, right? So this is where you are doing your checklists, you're going through your medical appointments, you're doing your VA claim, you're trying to secure employment, you're finding a dentist, maybe somewhere to live. You get the point, right? The logistic part of your transition, I'm telling you right now, is probably going to be the most simple thing that you are ever going to do in this stage of your life. It might seem hard, especially for those that are maybe having a hard time securing employment. It's tough. I'm sure that you can agree too. If you don't have a degree, it's tough to get the employment at the salary that you're desiring. But that's where you really have to, like, right now, what is in your control? What can you do? You know, so get your certifications, go on LinkedIn Learning, go on YouTube, read a book, or start a degree. But the logistic part of your transition is going to be super simple. The other part, transforming, that is the mental piece. That's what happens when you leave the security of the military, you take your uniform off, and you are no longer defined by the chevrons or the rank on your uniform, where you no longer have automatic credibility when you walk in a room. I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm not proud to admit this, but I sure miss people standing when I walk in a room. That's what happened when you were a senior master and in the Air Force. People would stand for you. You never had to, you know, really prove that you belong there. You had the credibility on your stripes and people knew what it took to get there. And that transformation piece is the piece that trips veterans up. That's the piece that makes them think that they shouldn't be, you know, on this great earth anymore. And you can't really do the work until you leave the military, but you have to do the work. So I immediately got a counselor and I committed to the counselor. I go every Wednesday, virtual or in person, whatever our schedules allow us. I don't quit my medication just because I feel good. You know, I have PTSD from the military and I am committed to make sure that I'm taking care of myself and my health and my, you know, my mental health as well, because other people are counting on me, because my husband and my son get to live their best life because of me, because of what I'm doing and what I'm bringing to the table. So the first thing I would tell people is know the difference between your transition and your transformation. Your transition, you're going to get a checklist for that. And there's going to be a lot of resources that are going to help you with your transition. But that transformation piece, the mental switch that you have to truly make that's going to take some time. And that's not something that just takes place in a year or 3 years. I would say that I believe that I'm at the point. Like, I no longer believe that I'm like a military person anymore. I'm more like, nope, I work at Continental. I'm an HR professional. Like, that's my identity now. So that's the biggest piece of advice. And I will tell you, you know, the book has it all in there, and it doesn't matter to me if you go and get the book, but very simple things. One, take it 1 year at a time. Two, define what your definition of success is for that year. Three, you have to know what you want your work-life balance to look like. So think about the things that you did not like when you were in the military. If you didn't like to travel, don't agree to a job that makes you travel. If you didn't like shift work, don't agree for a job that requires you to work shifts. If you don't want to be on call, then you might want to look at an hourly job and not a salary job. So you have to truly define what you want your work-life balance to look like. And here's the key. You have to ask the other people in your life, because you're doing life with other people, right? Even your pets. Like, you have to think about your pets too. Do you think they want to be boarded or in a crate for 12 hours a day? So don't forget that this transition and this transformation includes other people. And then define your bare minimum salary based on that information, because you can't go in asking for $100,000 if you don't want to work more than 40 hours a week, don't want to be on call, and don't want to do things outside of your job description. No, it doesn't, right? Am I right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to make sure that your salary is aligned with what you want your work-life balance to be. And then define your location. You know, your location matters, because you want to make your job search as simple as possible. And you also want to ensure that, you know, your recruiters and hiring managers are not applying their subconscious bias, because if they know that you are across the country, then they understand that that might require maybe like a relocation package that you're going to negotiate, or extra money, or whatever it may be. So figure out where you want to live and then search for jobs in that area. And so that's my advice. Define your definition of success. Know what you want your work-life balance to look like. Have a bare minimum salary in mind, and then decide on your location. And just take it all 1 year at a time. And the biggest thing I say to people is, like, don't let perfection be the enemy of good. Your first job out of the military doesn't have to be the place that you live for 20 years. You know, you can, if you take it 1 year at a time and you gain all of the knowledge and experience that you can in that 1 year, then now you're more educated to make a decision. Nothing is final anymore. When you leave the military, the biggest advantage that you have is choice. You get to make a choice. And if you don't like something, then you can make a decision to change it. And you don't have to wait for your enlistment or your contract to end.
Thank you very much for that, Misty. We've asked some questions today. There are probably many questions that our listeners would ask. How can they find you if they want to ask those questions or follow your content?
Yeah, the best place that I hang out is LinkedIn. So message me. You can find my contact information there as well with my email. I'm always open to have a conversation. I do a lot of things on the weekends, but you can message me and I'll answer as much as I can via messaging.
All right, great. Well, we'll make sure we get your LinkedIn account or your LinkedIn URL in the episode notes for Misty Moreno. Follow them for 3 a.m. thoughts. I do. you got to check out her profile. She's prolific on LinkedIn. Misty, thank you so much for giving us a really good rundown on different occupation fields, different career paths, and for, you know, sharing your personal opinions. And I think it's just going to be really helpful for other transitioning service members. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity. Anytime that I can help veterans out, you know, just remember that you're not alone. You have a community. And so reach out to us. This is the one time where we really need you to exercise that resilience and, you know, get a network of people around you, and don't do it by yourself. You got this.
All right. Thanks. I'll be in touch, Misty.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And Misty Moreno has left the virtual studio. Sis. It sounded like you wanted to like kick me out of the room.
I know.
Have her fly up and then drink champagne because yes. you like bubbles.
Yes.
And then talk about the triumphs and tragedies of HR, but really, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it was just really great to connect with somebody on a level that I can understand. But one of the things that she said in the very beginning, which is something that we can all take away from, she said, whatever is in my control is what I will do. And I think that we consistently try to stretch ourselves so much that we start to stretch ourselves so thin and that we get exhausted and burn out so quickly because we think we need to know everything. We think we know what track we're going to go on. But being in control of or doing what you're in control of from the very get-go is so, so important. And I really appreciated when she said that.
Now, that's an interesting point you bring up. There were a couple of things that stood out in my mind. She mentioned LinkedIn Learning. Haven't thought about that. Mm-hmm. Have looked through numerous resumes. I'm sure others, maybe you've checked out resumes on LinkedIn and then looked at job postings, whether it was for a private company or maybe it was in, you know, I don't know, maybe a government contractor, whatever. But I noticed that there were a certain listing of systems like preferred experience in this type of system or that type of system. So I never really thought about using LinkedIn Learning to not only get training on the system, but it makes me think of the value that that knowledge has. Even though if you don't have experience, I could probably find parallels between what I do in the military in those various systems and what the systems do that are mentioned in a specific job posting. I could at the very least make that translation, speak to that lexicon or that verbiage that's used within that industry during an interview and probably help adapt, draft number 4 into draft number 5 of whatever my resume is. The other thing that stood out in my mind, and she was mentioning this near the end, she was talking about, you know, measuring or kind of defining what success looked like every year and redefining it on 4 different dimensions. And you know what that sounded like, sis? That sounded like a campaign plan. Now, some of you have never dealt with drafting a campaign plan. Some of you in the military, with senior enlisted and officers, you know what it means to draft a campaign plan or at least support the drafting of it. It's about thinking about what the commander's intent is for yourself. Right? Thinking about what your desired future state looks like. Figuring out what are your lines of operations? How do those tie into your core values? And what are the desired outputs or the desired, not end state, but desired future state? And then revisiting that every single year. What she's talking about, that sounds like campaigning to me, except it's just taking the knowledge and the skill set that we have, that I know I have, that I know many service members have, even if it's a patrol order, and that's your level of experience. You know what a commander's intent is and what an end state is. Maybe we should all start thinking about what our desired end state is or desired future state is once we transition from the military. This wraps up another great conversation, and thank you very much for listening. If you like what you heard, you can support our podcast by giving us a 5-star review or whatever you think we rate. But yeah, 5 stars would be nice. If you think there's something we could do better, reach out to us. We're all about continuous process improvement, so we'd love to hear from you. You can also follow the New Mission Career Transition podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and other podcast applications. You can follow us on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. We would also love to hear your feedback. As I said, you could DM us on Instagram or you could send us an email at our email address, newmissionct@gmail.com. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.